Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
We're in the laundry room that connects to the garage, seeing the younger version of myself be taught to not rely on people. And she's taught that, like, people will walk away. And I'm stuck in that room of just going to what's familiar.
Absolutely.
Even if it's poisonous. So I'm on the dating apps, you know, messaging multiple girls. And I was devastated to find that I was doing the same thing again. And so I've had to really reconcile with the fact that my body and nervous system is wired for chaos. And it's wired to believe that feeling unsafe means love and anything else is not real.
Mm-hmm.
Love was very conditional growing up. That's why it feels more real to earn someone's love that doesn't want to give it to me, because I'm just so used to doing that.
So you have this movie that came out. Has sex improved since you made this movie?
I don't think I ever...
Hi there, lovers. This episode is really about the brave and bold decision to resist the pull of the familiar. Even if the familiar is painful to us, even if the familiar has led us to trauma in the past, it is still something that can be incredibly tempting. And think of it this way. Whenever you're having a down day and you really just want a little pick-me-up, you want to feel better, you want to feel safe, we go to our comfort foods. And honestly, how many of us have kale on the top of our list of comfort foods?
You believe it's magic.
We're also going to be talking about resisting the urge to be the superhero for other people who are still in their toxic patterns, and instead choosing a life and specifically relationships that prioritize our well-being and our safety. We're also going to be talking about not throwing out the baby with the bathwater. And that means that when we are choosing better, that doesn't mean that we still can't have a little excitement, right? The opposite of chaos doesn't have to be boring. There's a difference between going bungee jumping and going on a roller coaster. And that difference isn't necessarily in the feeling. You're still going to get the drop in your stomach, the thrill, the joy, the laughter, without the threat that this could end really, really badly for you. Lily Singh takes us on a journey into what happens when we're unaware of our childhood wounds, a theme that she also explores in her new movie, Doing It. Now, her story left me curious about the science of why attachment wounds from childhood run so deep into our adult love lives. So at the end of our conversation, I share a mini class on what I discovered. But first up, please enjoy learning from the multifaceted, history-making Lily Singh.
For the top of this year, since 2025, I've gotten back on dating apps. And so I've had to relearn a lot of things about myself. And, you know, what I have found is that I tend to gravitate towards what is familiar, not necessarily what is right for me. And I think this has to do with the fact that I was raised in a pretty turbulent environment when it came to relationships. Like, I vividly remember, if I could, like, pinpoint where did my daddy issues or abandonment issues start, I have, like, a very visual memory of where I was when that happened. Specifically, I'll tell you, it's my childhood house. We're in the laundry room that connects to the garage. I feel like I am stuck in that room, like literally seeing the younger version of myself be taught to not rely on people, and that it's okay if people are unreliable. And she's taught that, like, people will walk away. And she's just standing there trying to make sense of it all as a young, young girl, but also, like, internalizing it, being like, this is just what's correct, and this is what I deserve, and this is what life is, and this is what relationships look like. And I'm stuck in that room.
Why is she in that room?
I think she's in that room because...
Was she told to wait till someone got home?
No, I think she was watching a family situation go down in that room. You know, she was watching people walk out, she was watching people fight. And, you know, as a kid, it never occurred to me. But as an adult, I keep telling my therapist, I'm like, any fight I have in a relationship, any time someone is unreliable, any time I feel slightly panicked or unsafe, like someone is going to walk away from me, I think I'm in that room still, like as that young girl. I feel stuck in that place. And so the reason I bring that up is if a partner acts unreliable in big or small ways, I'm talking big ways like, oh, there was this massive, massive thing that's really important to you and I completely forgot it, versus I said I would pick this up from the grocery store and I didn't, I still have that same visceral reaction of like, I can't rely on anyone. Everyone's going to leave me. I have to operate in this level of chaos and unsafety. But even though that doesn't serve me, that is how I have defined like love for so long. And so now that I'm...
Oh, why? It's making me sad thinking about that.
Oh, my God.
Hi, lovers. Taking a moment to show some love to our sponsor, BetterHelp, and also taking a moment because... just because. That's actually a lesson that I learned from my BetterHelp therapist all the way back in 2022 when your girl was pregnant, raising a one-year-old, running a business, and simultaneously running myself into the ground. And my therapist said to me, Shan, what I'm hearing from you is that you get a lot of joy and meaning out of being productive. And that's a good thing. But I also wonder, in the mix of being a human doing, can you also make some time just to be a human being? And that's something that 3 years later, I'm still reflecting on and trying to practice. And that's what a therapist can do for you. BetterHelp is on a mission to make starting therapy easier. All you do is go online, fill out a questionnaire, and you could be matched with a therapist in as little as 2 days. Also, if you're not jiving your therapist for any reason, you can switch at no additional cost. BetterHelp has over 7,000 reviews with a rating of 4.3 on Trustpilot, making it a platform that you can trust. Click the link in the episode description to learn more and get started, or go straight to betterhelp.com/loversbyshan, and that's how you're gonna get 10% off your first month of therapy at BetterHelp. Again, that's betterhelp.com/loversbyshan. And now, back to the conversation with Lily.
No, why? It's making me sad thinking about that.
Oh my God. It makes me sad too, honestly. It is sad because I think as an adult, you would want to think that, no, you know, like you deserve a liability. You deserve someone showing up for you. Logically, I know that. But my nervous system is not wired for that. Like, and that's another distinction I've learned is like what you know logically does not matter in terms of what your body is feeling and reacting. And so, when I got on these dating apps, I was like, I gotta figure it out now. I want reliability. You know, I want someone to show up for me. I wanna feel safe. I logically know that. So I'm on the dating apps, you know, messaging multiple girls, and I was devastated to find that I was doing the same thing again. Like any girl that would breadcrumb me, like if there was a girl and she was bad at responding, she kind of made me feel really good and then kind of made me feel really dismissed. If she would want to go on a date, but like wouldn't confirm the time, wouldn't confirm the day, like just kind of like really doing the bare minimum, I became obsessed with those people. And anytime there would be someone that messaged me that was very reliable, was making me feel really seen, was like great at messaging, great responding, like, I want to see you, here's the date, here's the place, my nervous system would always be like, nah, that's not real. Like, that can't possibly be what love is. That can't, because I'm just so not used to that. And so I've had to really reconcile with the fact that my body and nervous system is wired for chaos. And it's wired to believe that feeling unsafe means love, and feeling chaos means love, and getting the bare minimum is love, and anything else is not real. And so over the past couple of months, I've been trying my best through like a lot of inner child work, through honestly, quite frankly, going against my instincts, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but if your instinct is to go towards chaos,
yeah,
trying to go against your instinct is something I've been working on. And so I am, you know, currently trying to pour attention into people who actually make me feel seen. And it's terrifying. It is so terrifying because every part of my body's like, not real, not real. This can't be it. This is not the definition of love we know. Because the last thing I'll say is what I've learned is that we're so committed to our worldview, and it's easier for us to maintain our worldview, even if it's painful and doesn't serve us. It is harder for my brain to be like, let's redefine love in relationships, and it's easier to be like, we'll just keep doing the same thing, even though it hurts.
So well, I'm like, because you know you survived it.
Right, exactly. And it feels so scary. It feels so scary to be in a relationship that feels healthy. I know that sounds crazy, but it feels so scary for my body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. I think what's feels resonant for me, we both come from Scarborough. Mm-hmm. We both come from, I would say a lot of like immigrant families did their absolute best, right? So we're all succession or improvement off of our parents' generation. And that laundry room that's attached to the garage, mm-hmm. because I know how houses are built. Mm-hmm. And I know that there were so many people just like you from our neighborhood who grew up in a two-parent house maybe, or who had many people there, and the appearance from the outside is like you're in a brick home and you're in a stable home and everything is great and nuclear family, but what's actually happening within can look a lot different. So I think people might be shocked to hear that.
Yeah, and listen, I love that you said that, because even before we started taping, I was like, it's always challenging to tell these kind of stories, because I by no way, shape, and form want to throw any ex-partner or my parents under the bus, because I do genuinely believe that most people are trying their best with the tools that they have, and I have nothing but respect and love for my parents. When I look back at like a lot of my childhood, they did their damn best. But, you know, immigrant parents are dealing with a plethora of other things. They're trying to survive. They're trying to pay the bills. They're trying to make it in a new country. And I love that you said you're from Scarborough and Toronto, because I feel like when I moved to LA, less people resonated with that. I have a lot of friends in LA whose parents are not immigrants. In Toronto, I don't have a single friend whose parents are not immigrants. So we were completely raised in immigrant culture. But yeah, I think love was very conditional growing up, not intentionally, but it was very much so like, did you get good marks? Like, did you do well in school? Did you make us proud of this family party? Did you say hello to everyone? Did you dress well? Those were the things that made parents proud. And so, you know, when we're talking about like my abandonment issues, having this trauma response, like I need to show people what I can do so I can earn their love and earn their love. That's why it feels more real to earn someone's love that doesn't want to give it to me, because I'm just so used to doing that. And when someone freely gives me love, it feels incorrect to me. And it's because I've always had to earn it, you know? And so another thing I've been actively working on is like this concept, which me and my therapist fought about for a while, I'm not gonna lie. She said something to me. She said, I need you to understand you're not what you do, and you do not need to earn love by doing things for people. And the first time she said that, I was like, I actually disagree with you. I was like, I don't understand how you can tell me I'm not what I do. What else would I be? Because when someone asks me who I am, I automatically go into like, well, you know, I'm an actress. I had a late night show, you know, I started on YouTube. I start going into all these accolades and my career. And she's like, that's not who you are. And I'm like, then who am I? And so I went out to ChatGPT and I said, and Chat agreed with my therapist, as she often does. And she said, I agree with your therapist. You're not the things that you do. And you don't need to earn love because you're a whole other person. And I was like, all right, if you're so smart, based on the conversations I've had with you, you tell me who I am without using a single accolade. Don't talk about any part of my career. And Shan, then she did. She did. In great detail, she was like, because I talked to the voice, she was like, you are a good friend because you asked me this 2 weeks ago about your friend that was struggling. Like, you are growth oriented because of like all these conversations. She literally, for the first time in my life at the age of 36, gave me an idea of who I was without naming a single stat, a single role in a movie or TV show. At the age of 36 is the first time I was like thinking of myself as a good friend, thinking of myself as a good partner even. Because even if you asked me to define myself as a partner, I'd be like, well, I can provide, you know what I mean? I can like cook, here's skill. But like, no, the idea of like, no, you are compassionate, Lily. Like, you are considerate. You are really thoughtful. Never used these words to describe myself ever before. Didn't know how to. Was never taught I could. Was always just what I did. And so I think that leads to a lot of like my in relationships, why I operate like that. We're in a fight, let me show you what I can do. We're starting to date, okay, I'm gonna do flowers, I'm gonna do this, let me show you all the things I can do, I'll get us the best reservation, I'll pick you up, I just need to show you what I can do for you so that you do not leave me in the laundry room, in that laundry room again. You know what I mean? And that's been a tough thing to unlearn.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear your parents talking about you positively, not related to something that you did well, just because of who you are?
I have no immediate memories of that, to be honest. The only thing I can think of is that once, she didn't say it to me, actually. My mom didn't say it to me. She said it to my sister, and my sister told me. She said, Mom met someone today, and she said how her daughter, Lily, just is really good at believing. Like, if she believes she can do something, nothing will stop her, and she'll do it. She never said that to me. But that is the earliest memory of me being like, oh, that's like a quality in me you're commenting on. But other than that, no. And again, I go back to like, I don't think my parents know how to do that or knew how to do that. Now, as an adult, they've gotten better. Like my dad, when he saw the movie, I'm proud of you, Lily. I was like, you're proud of me? Who taught you that word? Where'd you learn that word? You know? So I think it's because, and my mom always says this to me. She's like, growing up, my mom never told me she was proud of me. My mom never, she always says, my mom never hugged me. My mom never said she was proud of me. In fact, till this day, my mom will say that as an adult, like she's a full adult, she's like 60s now, she says I'm the only person that hugs her. She goes, I miss you when you're not at home because when you're not here, no one else hugs me. So it's not a very affectionate, you know, wearing love on your sleeve type of environment that I grew up on because everyone was just like using the tools they had. Mm-hmm. But that does impact you into adulthood, you know? So.
And then in ways that you don't always predict, right? So because everything that you're saying right now, I believe that we can all intellectualize. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that like common trope that like, you're not a human doing, you're a human being, right? And at the end of the day, we're all lovable. We're all taught mm-hmm. these basic principles right. that like, we're all made from love. If you believe in God, we're made in God's mm-hmm. image. And why don't those things permeate? Like, even though we know all these things to be true, right. why don't they permeate the same way that the conditioning that we got that was almost unsaid in childhood does?
Right, it's crazy. I've been thinking about this a lot too because at the age of 36, and I keep going back to 36 because I really was on a high horse of like, you got this figured out. You're 36, come on girl. You're not playing games anymore. This is not high school anymore. You've been through the relationships, you got this figured out. And I was just stunned at the fact that like after all of these lessons, after all this therapy, I still, when I was on those dating apps, I was like, are you really out here instinctually doing the same thing again? That's crazy. And that's why my newest tattoo student for life, I just learned, I was like, this, you need to not play yourself and think that you ever have it figured out again. Because the reality is we'll never have it figured out. We'll keep learning over and over again. We deserve to be loved just because we exist. And then we'll forget and we'll learn it again. And then another relationship will happen. We'll learn it again. So I've just committed to the fact that this is a lifelong journey of like working through things, rewiring your brain, learning, unlearning, et cetera.
Well, going to the student component yeah. of things, because often what happens is once we come to these ahas, we can see in other people, like the people who are breadcrumbing, the people mm-hmm. who are offering intermittent rewards,
right.
the people, it's because they personally feel like they aren't lovable.
Right.
They subconsciously feel like they have to play manipulative games in order to get people mm-hmm. on board with them. And they're okay with that exchange.
Right.
So you could feel like you could free those people.
Right. Totally. And what you're saying is so true because one of the girls actually, in a heated moment, said as such to me in an argument where she was being pretty, pretty mean to me. She was like, oh, you know, I have healing to do and I'm just like self-indulgent right now. And she for a second was able to like tap into that. And that is something I'm trying to work on. It's like every morning in my prayers, and again, I don't know what the stance on God is, but every morning in my prayers, I'm like, yo, help me see the God in me and the God in other. And I think that's really important, is that we are all in our struggle. We are all in our trauma. And my trauma looks, I sin differently from you. My trauma is differently from you. But we are all kind of in it. And I think what I'm getting better at is like, this person over here is not a reflection of my worth and what I deserve. They are dealing with their own laundry room. They're stuck in their own place. We're stuck in two different places. That takes a lot to actually believe and recognize. Because we are, as human beings, so self-indulgent. We do think everyone's actions are a reflection of me. They're talking to me. It's absolutely about me. It's actually like requires a little bit of getting off your high horse to be like, it's not about me. And that is that thought will actually serve you, to be like, it's not about me. People are just stuck in their own situations, you know?
I ask that question because often when people do get into that loop, which, as the common saying goes, the devil that you know is better than one that you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And your brain loves familiarity.
Right, absolutely.
It loves it. And then from a biological standpoint, that's logical as to why. Because even if that poison, if that bush has a bunch of poisonous berries, you've gotten sick enough times to right. figure out which one won't kill you. So your brain is like, go back to that bush. Even though some of them will make you sick, at least we know that they're not going to kill us
right.
versus going to the new one. And so it's logical why our brain does that. So while you're getting tempted to kind of go back to that familiar environment, even though you know it will make you sick, it will make you sad, it will trigger old wounds, mm-hmm. I will put you back in that laundry room.
Right.
Now that you can tell the story a different way, is there a temptation to say, well, it's okay if I revisit old patterns because now I have new ways of coping? Or do you just have to say, fuck that bush?
Honestly, I kind of have to say, fuck that bush. I'm going to be honest with you. I've done a lot of journaling and meditation on this, and I'm like, Yes, I'm not actually, there's a few things I've worked on. One is I am not the same girl stuck in that laundry room. I have a better toolkit. I have better resources. I have a great therapist. I have great friends. I have a great support system. I have, honestly, to be quite frank, like resources to live where I want to live, do the job I want to do. I have a lot of things that are different from that girl. I think a few things have happened. One is I don't take a shit on that girl anymore. I think for most of my life, for most of my life, I've been very like, why are you stuck in that laundry room? Why are you still in me? I'm a full adult. Why are you still why are you still hurting? And over the past couple of months, I'm like, actually, because of that little girl and her resilience, I probably have this life I have now. I have the skills I have now. I have the resilience I have now. I probably have the career I have now because I was so motivated to just make something of myself. And so now I'm like, little girl is a badass, actually. Like, we're not gonna look down on that little girl anymore. Another pivot I've made in my brain is understanding it is my responsibility as adult Lily to protect that little Lily. I never had that understanding either. I was just like, she's there, I'm there, we're separate. But it is my job to make decisions that protect her and serve her. Because thus far in my life, every decision I've made has harmed her. Now, if I'm going on a date with someone or I am doing a project or I like have a friend, I really view that situation or person through the lens of, are you good for that little girl? Or are you gonna hurt that little girl again? I'm really looking for that. I also befriended that little girl. And this is where I might sound a little crazy, Shan, but I'm gonna be real with you. I have befriended that little girl to the sense of like, I really do visualize myself in that room next to her now. I visualize myself being there for her. Any major accomplishment that happens, I take a moment to be like, let me talk to her. We did it, we did this together. I have a specific song I play when I like dance with her before an audition, before a movie, after a movie. I'm like, you are gonna be my friend. I'm gonna take care of you like I should have taken care of you all these years. And I'm not gonna let you be stuck in that room. I even visualize me taking her out of that room sometimes. I visualize certain people not being allowed near her. I'm like, nope, you're gonna do the same thing to that little girl. So I know this sounds a little bit like I might be delusional, but I just really am trying to do the inner child work to be like, how do I make the choices that actually serve me and not repeat patterns that hurt me?
Mm-hmm. I give a big clap for that too, because I feel like there's a percentage of us who believe that self-help was bettering ourselves so that we could separate ourselves from our old self. And not just our old self in terms of our childhood self, but the self that you were in the last relationship, right? Like, also choosing not to shit on that version of yourself, mm-hmm. the person who yesterday was like interested in the toxic relationship for the plot. Like, also not being like, that person's an idiot. Like, mm-hmm. so in essence, you're not really changing the patterns of radical self-acceptance because you're only accepting an idealized version of yourself versus like the continuous version of who you are. And being able to retroactively empathize builds that muscle for the future. Right. So I gave a big clap because I think that we do often get into those patterns of being like, I was an idiot before.
Totally,
Now, super smart. Right. And then next month, you'll be on a different podcast being like, I was an idiot before.
Right,
100%. And then you're just going to continue on that self-hatred pattern. So I love to hear getting off of that ride.
Yes, absolutely. That is exactly what it's like. Because even you're so right. 2 years ago, I absolutely would have been like, I was dumb before, friend. But now I'm different. Yeah. I'm different today, though. We're making better choices today. And we all know how long that lasts. I think it's like, we have to give ourselves grace. We are all growing, we are all learning, but even when I journal, I find myself like being my own hype woman. Like, I'm so proud of you, like I love you, like I'm choosing you. Not to keep referencing my tattoos, but I've had tattoo fever over the past month and a half, and so this whole story can be summarized by this one tattoo, which is, I'm choosing you now and I won't stop. And that's just a like, you think you've lived your entire life shitting on that little girl, making choices that hurt her. You have tried to prove your worth to every single person. You've prioritized every single person. You've been in relationships and long-term situations where you were really unhealthy and unhappy and felt unsafe, but you kept giving and giving and giving because that's what you know. And this is very like, now I'm choosing me and I will not stop. Because choosing me is not bad. Choosing me actually makes me the best version of myself for other people and for myself, you know? So I think there's like a, and selfish is not the right word. It's just self-compassion, I think. And maybe sometimes it is selfish. I don't know, but that's another thing I definitely was not taught to prioritize myself growing up. It was very much so about like, what can you give to others and how can you survive? And I know where that comes from. You know, you're talking about our immigrant parents. My parents survived via community. You know, when you immigrate from somewhere and you go somewhere to a brand new country, all you have is community. My mom has told me this time and time again. She's like, if I didn't provide to our family and they didn't like us and, you know, we would not survive. We would not have the support system to survive. And so that's why they cared so much about what other people thought for survival. That's why they like provided to people for survival. So I think the thing we have to learn as kids of immigrants is we are not surviving in that same way. We have that survival trauma in us, but we are not in those circumstances anymore. So when you were raised with that, they're like, what will people think and how can I provide? And especially then you have a job in Hollywood, that's a horrible combination. You've been taught to care what will people think, and then you get a job where like literally everyone has an opinion about what you do. As you can see, it's caused a lot of friction in my life. Can I tell you my song I used to dance for? Yes. Little Lily? Okay. It's from the soundtrack of Matilda. You know, the itty bitty pretty. One second too much. I know you can't. The copyright's an issue. But it's itty bitty pretty.
You can't sing?
Well, I mean.
You know more than me about this shit.
Okay, it's going on YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you 5 seconds. Little bitty pretty one, I've been watching you grow. That's all I'll give you because I don't want to get flagged.
Now, I don't know if it's the same song. I know the Frankie Lyman one.
Am I combining two songs? That's the one. Am I combining two songs?
Little bitty pretty one. Yeah. Come on and talk to me.
Okay, then don't do anymore. Don't do anymore. Don't do anymore. They'll flag it.
We can just be silent now. Just say,
Yeah, but that's the one. So literally before my movie premiere, literally before an audition,
oh, wow.
I like imagine holding that little girl's hand and I'm like, I'm choosing you now. I will not stop. No matter what happens in this audition, this does not define you. No matter what happens in this movie, this does not define you. This person I'm about to go on a date with, if they even give me a hint of something that's gonna be bad for you, we're gonna get out of there. Like, I'm just promising that little girl through that song and through that dance. And it's a nice little visualization.
Thank you for sharing that. Can you take me into a moment where you felt like you've had to decide?
Yes. So there's two people I was talking to on a dating app. One, hey, I'd love to go out sometime. Great, let me know when and where. Cool, yeah, maybe sometime next week. Sure, what day works? Long silence. Hey, just following up, what day works? And now I'm like starting to obsess over like checking my phone constantly, like have they responded yet? How many minutes have they been? This person over here on the left, I would love to see you. How does this day work and how does this time work? If this works for you, I'll find the place. Like, all the proactive effort to meet up in person. And I'm looking at that, I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna respond to that yet because I just wanna see what happens over here. And so that day I had a reckoning to be like, let's take a step back here. Do you like the way that feels, Lily? Like, I know you're obsessing, but actually take a step. Like, how are you feeling? You feel panicked. You're checking your phone. You're out with your friends. You're checking your phone nonstop. You're doing the math of how long it's taking for them to reply. You're stalking them on stories. Like, what do they do? Like, is that how you want to feel? This person makes you feel really secure, and your brain is just repelling. So I just was like, literally, you're going to go against instinct. I was like, not gonna entertain this anymore. Literally confirmed this plan. Literally went on a date. Had a lovely, amazing time. And I've had such an honest banter with this person about this, the fact that like I'm new to this, I'm figuring this out. This situation and other people like this situation is what I'm currently doing. And it feels so safe and so loving. I'll tell you what happens. When I'm with the person, I feel very safe. So my nervous system can recognize that like, oh, this person's really reliable. They're really good at responding. They're paying attention to me when they're, you know, I don't feel any type of way. Then when I'm not with the person, my nervous system goes right back into like, this can't be real. This is probably not real. So it's a work in progress. It's a work in progress to be like, keep getting your nervous system to be okay with this. Keep teaching them this is what safety is, because my worldview has had 36 years. And this is just a few months that I've been trying to work on it. So I'm constantly just being like rewiring. But currently I'm proud to say I'm here. I'm in this section over here. Reliability against my instinct.
Objectively, and you don't have to use these people as an example, mm-hmm. but most times people are saying it's because null and void of how you're being treated, the person who is giving you breadcrumbs is actually the person who on paper you're more traditionally attracted to than the person who is behaving in a way that's a consistent, reliable partner who's showing up and showing interest.
Right.
Would you objectively say it's the behavior that is turning you off, or is it usually the kind of person you're not that attracted to who exhibits the behavior that feels more safe?
That's a really, really good question, because I've thought about this a lot, because I think how I justify getting breadcrumbed is like, oh, I'm just attracted to this person. I'm really attracted to this person. And so I'm like I said, I'm back on the apps, and my friends, my council of female friends, we have little fire pit sessions where they come to my house and I'm like, y'all, I need to tell you everything that's going on the apps on Raya. Let me give you the tea. And I'll show them pictures of girls sometimes, and my friends will be like, that girl is so hot. And it'll be the girl that's the reliable one. And so what I've learned is that I am attracted to the chaotic behavior. It is the chaos I'm attracted to. It is the feeling of panic that I'm like literally turned on by, to be like, oh my God, look at this person. They're not giving me a lot. I have to like show my worth to them. It's gonna be a challenge. The challenge is exciting to me. Look at my job, look at everything I do. The challenge is like part of it, right? You don't get the challenge, it doesn't feel sexy. It's the chaos. It's literally the chaos. And I know this because actually, and maybe this is true of any person we talk to that hurts us, when I make the decision to be like, I deserve better than this, and I don't, this little girl deserves better than this, overnight, I'm not attracted to that person anymore. Like overnight, I'm like, actually, if I see a picture of you, I don't find you attractive. It is literally the feeling you give me of anxiety that I am chasing, which is like so sad to say, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. We do this thing. We have a to feel wheel. Do you do to feel wheels?
No, what's that?
You know the feeling wheels where it allows you to name the actual feeling that you're looking after? And so we rebranded it to basically not just reflect the feelings that we want in general, but specifically in romantic relationships. And a part of it too was also acknowledging that sometimes you do require, like, I actually enjoy to feel jealous in a relationship. Mm-hmm. But the jealousy that I experience with Jared is so different than the jealousy I experienced in the past. Instead, I love when I see him valued, appreciated, and sought after by other people because of the deep security that we have.
Right.
But I have fun with the concept of like, no, I have somebody really special who other people see something special in.
Yeah.
So it's like you can still have, you know, be drawn to a challenge or somebody who challenges you. But the challenging isn't humiliating. Instead, it's invigorating, right? Like you could still be drawn to somebody who makes you feel nervous, but the nerves is because they're pushing you outside of your comfort zone and not like kicking you, just like kind of nudging you like, no, let's try this extra toy. And you're like, but I don't know if I've tried that before.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, let's do it.
Yeah.
Like, I dare you.
Yeah. I just learned so much from you. You just, something in my brain just literally clicked when you said that.
Okay, tell me.
Okay. Wow. I can't wait to journal on this later. Okay. You said a key thing, which is like, I think I have had this, I don't want to say delusion, but I feel like this thought pattern where it's like, I need to chase the anxiety. But the reality is all relationships have a level of anxiety.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think if the anxiety, it just can't have to do with feeling safe. I just need to feel safe. So this person doesn't make me feel safe. This person does make me feel safe. Both will give me anxiety. This is the container of anxiety that I could probably chase and be attracted to. That is an important distinction. I'm open to being wow. Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. You're okay with being jealous of a certain person because you feel safe.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. Those girls who breadcrumb me, they don't make me feel safe. They make me feel like they're going to leave me in the laundry room. This person will not leave me in the laundry room, but they'll give me stress and anxiety through another way. And that's what I need to realize. So I think I do have a really bad habit of being black, white, this, that, right, wrong. It's not anxiety versus no anxiety. It's just different. One is safe and one is not safe.
Okay. Wow. Well, let me ask you this journal prompt then.
Okay.
Take me into a Tuesday with your ideal loving relationship. What are you doing? How do you feel? What are you guys talking about?
So one of the main words that comes to mind when I think of a loving relationship, the first one is team. I think I've always craved a teammate more than anything else, meaning like I'm a big fan of asking a simple question when I'm in relationships, which is, what are you out of 10 right now in terms of energy? And if you're at a 4 and I'm at an 8, then I know I can step up more and you can step up less, and that number will shift throughout the day and we can be each other's teammates. So Tuesday for me is waking up. If I've got, I'm gonna paint the scenario. If I, let's say I'm doing movie press, like I'm doing right now, waking up, my teammate has less things to do, they're gonna make
breakfast.
You know
what breakfast. I love about this too, yes. The reflection, because I'm saying Tuesday like it's a boring day,
yeah.
But you probably don't have boring Tuesdays, because today is Tuesday.
Oh yeah, oh, is that what you're trying to get?
Yeah.
No girl, every day is, for me, is something. I'm like, Tuesday could be, I could be taking 6 flights on a Tuesday. I think connecting in the morning is really important. Cuddling in bed for a little bit. I even set the alarm a little early to make sure there's some cuddle time in there. Getting up. I really believe in a morning routine, and I believe in like having individual practices when it comes to that. I don't feel like a partner has to do every single thing with you in the day. They don't have to be part of your morning routine or your journal. That's like a little me time. Breakfast together I think is really nice. If I'm really busy, I would love for my partner to make me breakfast. I would love to have it together. And I think just throughout the day, it's like, I don't know, maybe this is like really lame of me, but I just like keeping in touch with my person throughout the day. Hey, babe, just did this, leaving this interview now. I just had a great chat with Shan, you know, going here now. Can't wait till I see you get home. Like, do you want me to pick up dinner? Do you want to pick up dinner? I think it's just communication and like gauging each other's energy and showing up for each other, not because we have specific roles to do so, but because we have different bandwidth throughout the day. And so at the end of the day, if she's like, oh my God, this just happened and I like am swamped with work, I'll be like, great, I'll pick up dinner, I'll figure it out, I'll deal with that. So I don't know if this is as specific as you want it to be, but I think it's just having a teammate who throughout the day, everything life throws you, from the house stuff falling apart to like dogs if you got dogs, to meals, to whatever chores or tasks need to happen, it's just about like communication, gauging each other's energy, and being able to pivot with each other's energy. Mm. I think that's really important. So I've just gotten really good at being like, what are you out of 10? Because if I have a bit more points than you, I'll make up. You can have 2 of my points and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. What's the little spice that they're going to add in there? What's the thing that they do that like pushes you a little bit, that pushes your buttons, but you kind of love it?
It's 100% going to go to reliability. So what I'm working on is like the example I gave you earlier is if someone does something really big or really small. Sometimes people are unreliable in really small ways and my brain treats it the same as a big way. Mm. It has to do with my delusion, because it's not fact, my delusion that I can control. And if I can control, I can feel safe and I can protect myself. That's all it is. I think the reason I'm such a control freak is I believe that's how I can keep myself safe and protect myself, although that's not true, because there's many instances where I've been a control freak and I've still gotten hurt and I've not been able to protect myself. But the whole like schedule, rigidness, reliability thing is like, if you can protect against being disappointed, like if you have a strict time and if like you're this way and you have like a, it's just this delusion of control that I need to let go of. Mm. Honestly is what it is. Actually, do I have it with me today? I do. Oh my God. Okay, wow. Because I was going to tell the story and I'm like, what a shame if I don't have it with me today. I actually do something to help with my control freakness, because I recognize that it's not, it's a every quality I have is really helpful in some instances and really unhelpful in some instances.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So being a control freak has really helped me on set, meeting a deadline, in school, you know, submitting a script. Does not help when you're on a first date, when you're chilling with friends, when you're at a family party. Does not serve you there. So I'm trying to get better at like distinguishing when to alleviate control and when to actually claim it as my superpower. So something I carry with me every day to help me with this is a die.
Ooh,
yes, it is.
Beautiful die.
It's a D&D die for all my nerds out there. What's up? But it's a die. And the reason I have it is because I'm getting better at being like, is this something you can delegate to the die? That you don't have to make a decision on. Just get more comfortable at being like, even if you don't make a decision and control the outcome of this, it'll still be okay. And I want you to learn it will still be okay.
That's important to me to differentiate, because not everything is something that you can gamble and play with.
Absolutely, yeah.
Your sense of safety,
mm-hmm.
and knowing specifically what makes you not feel safe.
Right.
And if it is time, I say you hold on to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you communicate that to somebody, and if they really genuinely want to show up for you in ways that they want to be shown up for, they'll respect that.
Yeah.
And then you're saying there's other areas of flexibility, but this is one area that I need to know, that this is my checkpoint to know, mm-hmm. that if you're actually
right.
here with me.
Right.
So I think that that's a key differentiator.
Thank you.
That's really helpful for me. I love that exercise. And
it's a little sharp and hurts me sometimes, but it's worth it.
I was like, it could have been a coin, because if you're doing odds or evens, it could be
flat. But it's not always that. Sometimes there's multiple options.
True.
And like D&D people, more you know that there's multiple types of dice as well. You know that there's you have 4-sided. You all know what I'm talking about. But like,
all right, so you have this movie that came out, mm-hmm. and it is not your story per se, but it's about a 30-year-old who is kind of thrust into this world of talking about sex and relationships, even though it's the complete opposite of their comfort.
Right.
This person's a virgin. You are not.
I am not.
Yes.
No. But there are elements of my life infused into this character for sure.
Okay.
She's very similar to me. A lot of things I was told in my upbringing, a lot of like my journey on learning shame is in this character. I did this reaction video I posted online of my parents reacting to some scenes of the movie. And I knew, like, listen, it's a sex comedy. I knew that when it came out, there was going to be 2 groups of people. Half the people were going to be like, I resonate with this so deeply. And I've gotten a lot of those responses. Like, I feel so seen. I had this exact same journey with sex. And, like, this movie really helped me. And I knew there would be another group of people that are just upset about seeing a sexually empowered woman on screen, especially one that looks like me. Because, you know, it's not common and it's not... has a lot to do with shame and respect and their ideas of what a woman should be. And so I knew all of this and I was ready for all of this. But when I posted this reaction video of my parents reacting to one of my scenes, if you haven't seen it, so basically it's them being awkward. My mom is laughing, having the time of her life. And then afterwards, it's verbatim my dad being like, I didn't think it was a big deal. I think it's really funny. Everyone should go see it. I'm like really proud of her. And he's being so sincere. The amount of comments under there that are, how could you be so disrespectful to your parents? But not only that, the one that really was like, yo, this is, the patriarchy is strong right now. It was, it's one thing to have this conversation with your mom, but to do it with your dad is a level of like shame and disrespect. People were furious that I made my dad watch it. Not my mom, but my dad, like how could I possibly put a man in that position? And the father who raised me, I'm like, y'all, my dad is not a virgin. I know you think he might be, but he's not. Like, he knows what's up. But I was really taken aback by that, that this idea that, like, and why that upset me is because, like, especially, and I'll speak just from South Asian culture, is there's so many issues around abuse, sexual abuse, domestic abuse. There's issues in, you know, abuse from fathers. If anything, you should want to normalize the conversation with sex and men. You should want to be able to have a conversation with sex and men. And for you to be like, it's acceptable for you to talk about this with anyone else except a man, except the man that you should love you the most and should care for you the most, which is your dad, like, that was wild for me to see. A lot of those comments. So I was like, that's exactly why we need this movie. Exactly why we need this movie.
And you saw them do exactly what you have done in the past of just going to what's familiar.
Absolutely.
Even if it's poisonous. Well, what's the one piece of advice you would give that commenter? I'm sure you didn't comment back, but if you did,
I mean, I did for
say?
Some of them.
In closing, what would you say to the person who is feeling all the shame, all the fear, all the things that they don't want to feel anymore, but at least they're used to feeling that way? What would you tell that person to nudge them in a new direction?
I would say that thus far in my life, I've learned that one of the most detrimental things you can be in life is someone who thinks they have it all figured out. I feel like you have to commit to being a student for life. You have to commit to this idea that there's another way that you don't know yet that could work for you. There's another idea there that could serve you better. Maybe it's not the idea you have right now, but there could be another idea that serves you better. So I think just the commitment to growing and learning and putting yourself in new situations is really critical. Go buy a ticket to the movie. And if after you watch it, you're like, still not my jam, still not your jam. But for you to just keep operating through life with your opinions as facts and not being open to learn and not being open to another idea that could serve you better, I don't know if that's how we live our best life, to be honest.
Not that you made it for this reason, but has sex improved since you made this movie?
I will report back to you. Not a lot of sex has been happening. I've been working on the movie, girl. I have no time. I'm tired. But I do think it will. Mostly because I don't think I ever viewed sex as something I should enjoy. And I know that sounds sad, but like, I don't think women especially are taught that they should enjoy sex and that they're allowed to be vocal about like what the one. I was definitely not taught that. I think post this movie, why I think sex will improve is because I think I'll be way better at being like, I like this, I don't like this. This works for me, this doesn't work for me. I don't think I was ever empowered to do that before.
Well, I'm hoping for you a Tuesday where you wake up, have a slow morning, a lovely breakfast, come home for dinner at 7, where it's on the
Such
table
a good memory.
At 7.
Such a good memory, baby.
On a table at 7, and then your partner is like, oh, I gotta show you what's for dessert. And then they bring out something that makes you drop your jaw.
You know what?
And challenge all the thoughts you had around your own pleasure, your own right to pleasure, and you say, fuck it, I'm gonna do it.
You know what? From your lips to God's ears. Baby girl, from your lips to God's ears, let's go. I appreciate
Great
you holding
job.
Space
thank
and I
so
want to say thank you. I feel like I just wanted to say thank you because I feel like you are so inspirational in this way where like I strive to be more like you in this department and being so open and honest. And if I've stumbled through any of my stories, it's probably because I'm still in real time working through some of my trauma. So to your audience and to you, thank you for holding the space for like someone who's trying to figure it out.
Oh, you did a wonderful job. This was absolutely gorgeous. Thank you. And we did all the CTAs, right? Just go see the movie.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we good.
That's it. Let's just
Oh, well, let me say one more. So the movie is available to pre-order and you can rent it or buy it on Amazon, Apple, and Fandango on October 7th. So it's a small indie movie. It's not a big studio budget movie. So anyone that pre-orders it or rents it or buys it, like it really does mean the most because I put a lot of money into this movie. And if you want me to not be broke and have good sex, please watch it.
Thank you to Lily. Lovers, this is the kind of content we're passionate about, right? So we have to support it. Go to doingitmovie.com for all the information you need to watch and support. And speaking of needs, if you need a little more time to process today's conversation, then why not do it with us in the Lovers community? Fun fact, you can now preview episodes and join discussions like this for free by creating an account at loversbyshan.com/community.
I really related to Lily. And I'll share something personal is that I really love chaos and I like feeling obsessed. So I'm in the process of rewiring right now and it does not feel natural. And I feel like I'm wondering if it ever will feel natural or ever give me that same high as I got before.
I can almost promise you it is going to feel better. It definitely can change and it will change, but you must come up with an active plan. You must work within the realm of how your brain works in order to rewire it to acknowledge a new kind of love. I was very fascinated by the concept of the question, why do we repeat childhood patterns? We can experience something in childhood, which as we all know, is relatively a short amount of time in our lives. The longer that we are alive on this planet for, the shorter that it becomes. It can actually end up only being 10% of your lived experience. So why do we place so much emphasis on what happened during this 10% when we may have another full-ass 90 of a different story, of a different climate, of different messages? So I wanted to share a story with you guys. So when I actually first moved to California in 2014, I was on a hunt for love, not just the opportunity for a career to talk about it, but for love in my own life. And I thought to myself, okay, well, if I want to love things that are alive and be loved in return, what's in my capacity? And plants came to mind. So with all this intention, I went to Home Depot and picked out the most luscious, gorgeous looking plants. Then I brought them home and then I gave them the works. I positioned them perfectly in front of the window and I used to play classical music and even massage my plants with coconut oil. So all this great intention and lo and behold, about a month later, they all started to die one by one. Let me tell y'all something, I was pissed. I was so pissed, and then I would go out there in the world and observe all these other plants that were at the side of the highway, unloved, uncared for, unchecked for, who were thriving. And it made me feel like plants are just like people. The less that you care about them, the more that they seem to love you. And sometimes the more effort that we put into things, the more that they disappoint us. Obviously, bad generalization, but here's the nuanced lesson I had to learn. If you want to love a plant, you need to adapt to how it receives care. It will not adapt to you. If it's designed to thrive in a harsh climate, your healthy one's actually going to be toxic to it. And while that's not directly applicable to how humans receive love the way I deduced back then, there are some similarities. So I want to share first how people are not like plants. Plants have rigid wiring, and essentially that means there's no neuroplasticity. This plant right here is never going to change, right? It's never going to rewire itself to be able to embrace love in classical music. It just likes what it likes. I leave it outside. I haven't thought about this motherfucker in 10 years. It's doing just fine. But what makes humans humans is the fact that not only do we all come with some type of genetic wiring and coding, aka your DNA, we also have the ability to change over a lifetime. It's just that this change is a lot harder than most of us give it credit for, because at least according to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which you guys know I love referencing, if there's a battle in your brain between belonging and growth, belonging is going to win. And that essentially means that what is familiar to us feels safe, even if it isn't necessarily the best environment, right? Some of us can be the theoretical plant on the side of the highway. And although that isn't the best conditions, those are the conditions that we have adapted to and thus the conditions that we feel safe in. Move yourself into a warm environment that is centered around safety, care, and love. Even though these are inherently more safe and ideal conditions, if you're not accustomed to them, they can actually make you feel extremely uneasy, unsafe, and thus want to return back to your old environment. And I looked into that and thought, why? Why is the way that we experience love and connection in the beginning of our lives or so influential for the rest of our human lives? And it turns out that, as many of you probably know, for 95% of human history, we existed in hunter-gatherer groups. So within these hunter-gatherer groups, being included, being liked, being in group is essentially the key to your survival. For 95% of human history, the group that you were born into and the set of love rules that you adopted from childhood didn't really change until you died, right? Like that was the fixed culture of the small group of people that you were going to rely on for survival for the rest of your life. So while today this hardwiring is wildly inconvenient, in many ways we owe the survival of our species to it. So that's why the patterns run so deep. And now let me switch gears to explain how it's made. So the short answer is, repetition builds prediction. Chemistry makes it feel normal. Reward locks it in, and then it becomes an attachment style. Basically, your internal rule book for how love works. Bowlby called this your working model. We don't get to consciously choose our working model, but we do keep it and carry it into adulthood. And if left unchecked, naturally we start replaying it in new relationships. All right, that's a whole lot of talking to say this. There's great news in here, and that goes back to our plant analogy, in that people are not plants, so we can change things. But the humbling news is that we can't change it very quickly. It takes a lot of effort to rewire this pattern. And the first part of that effort is in recognition. So those of you who are in the community, and hopefully those who have been following me for a while, are familiar with my How to Love Me guide. But there was something that I didn't account for that I think the Lily Singh episode really underscores, is that there's a dramatic difference between how we actually feel love and how we aspirationally want to love. And if you don't have visibility on the two differences, you're going to end up sabotaging things that you're calling into your life. You're going to end up asking for one kind of love and then wondering why you can't seem to get out of the pattern of the old kind of love. So naming it so that you can slowly change it is an integral part of rewriting the story of what love means to you so that it aligns with the kind of life and the kind of nervous system that you know is truly possible for you. Finn, so now I wanna turn it over to all of you with all that being said to ask, one, if there's any clarifying questions or things that you wanna talk about, any ahas that came up for you either through that or through the Lily Singh episode.
The question I had was about the connection between stress and, I guess, your normal state. So I just want you to clarify again, the stress state is what is, I guess, takes precedence, is that correct, over the normal state?
That's a great clarifying point. So for some people, they require a little toxicity and then a bit of attention.
Okay, that's what I was asking, yes.
And then if there is no toxicity and then they get that attention, that reward system doesn't activate, so they don't get that rush of dopamine. So for people who, again, like in Lily Singh's case, she needed a little bit of breadcrumbing in order to actually feel good when that person did text her back. And if somebody was just providing consistent communication, then it wouldn't give her that same feeling of reward that she would get if there weren't adverse conditions first.
That explains so much. It's like why people oftentimes like to get into arguments, which is something I don't like, because it's normal for them in order to make some kind of to activate that pleasure center.
Yeah.
I have a question, Shan. You really opened up a lot on there. The part at the end stood out to me about the actual, what you actually want out of love versus your aspiration. And so I guess my question is you were saying that you want to have a distinction between the two and really know the distinction. But I also want to know, is there a way that you could align those to be the same thing? How I can relate it to my kink life. I want deep intimacy, but my deep intimacy of what I actually want would kind of look like a more high protocol or more aggression would actually be more intimate for someone like me. But what I'm actually desiring to people and communicating to them is that I'm wanting this deep intimacy, but it may not align with what my wants are.
It is a very interesting journey to choose the safer love that you cognitively know is better, but doesn't necessarily feel, I don't want to say doesn't feel as good, but I guess there's some truth to that. Yeah.
All right. I'm taking a stab at this. If I stab in the wrong direction, just tell me, okay? I think what's important to note is that we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? Because what it can sound like I'm saying right now is that there is a very specific wholesome prescription for how to be loved that we should all be adopting. And it should look the exact same way, right? Secure attachment style, consistent reward, a sense of safety, vulnerability, mutuality, trust, kindness, kind of all those words, right? So what happens if we actually like something a little to the left? Does it mean that we're inherently broken if we don't like things that are on the prescription healthy, wholesome list? The kind of best personal example I can give to this is I've shared with many of you in the community, grew up being very mean, being told I was very mean. And I have a family full of people who are, like, my dad is Olympic mean. And I don't mean that necessarily in a wholly traumatic way, because my dad is the kind of person that, you know, when you get into an argument with somebody and then later on you think of the perfect comeback and you're like, you know what I really should have said? My dad said it 100% of the time. And so there's something about that, although not the warm and fuzzy sort of holistic way of thinking about being a good person or being in connection, that I still kind of like. You know, I like wit. I like a little bit of roughness. That's kind of, again, also Caribbean culture. Caribbean people, just by virtue, are very quick-witted and sometimes a little bit cruel at times. So when I first got into my relationship with Jared, I basically said to him, like, hey, I need you to remember that I'm not really conditioned for all this niceness. And sometimes you being really nice to me is actually a turnoff to me. Like, I require a little bit of roughness. And he checked me on that.
I want you to know that in difficult times, remember the thing that I was initially attracted to you about was like your confidence. Being timid is going to make things worse. I'm not as nice as you. It doesn't come as natural for me to be like that. And so sometimes, especially in stressful situations, I revert back to more being like my dad.
Being nice has been learned. And I don't want it to be abused. But it's been learned. It's been something that I worked hard for. I have mean thoughts too. You know, I have a mean side too, but I self-control that. And so, you know, I don't ever look at you as somebody that can't control it. So when you do get mean, it lights me up.
Over the years, what I've come to realize is that there's a difference between bungee jumping and going on a roller coaster. And the difference doesn't necessarily have to be in the feeling. You could still get that rush of excitement, that drop in your stomach, the anticipation that you have before it. But in one circumstance, there is much more risk, and the other, it's much more controlled. So how do you get the feelings that you're accustomed to that you actually do still like, even though they are a little bit less stereotypical, warm and fuzzy, but you can still get that within a controlled environment? So in my relationship today, I'm actually love when Jared teases me or makes a little bit of a mean comment. It doesn't come in conflict. It doesn't come at a time where I feel low. He doesn't utilize that as a mechanism to try to motivate me. But when we are in a state of calm and connect and things are good between us and he teases me or makes fun of me, or I'm able to do the same to him, that does still feel like love to me. And that's not something that I'm looking to change. Ginger, please take that and move it to the right direction for yourself.
Yeah, I love that. It's almost like identifying what are the things that you learned in childhood that are going to make you feel safe in keeping those things, and then identifying what some things don't make you feel that way is kind of what I got a lot from that. So thank you.
Yeah, it's actually one of the things I said to Lily in the interview, because in essence, right, the opposite of safe doesn't have to be boring. The opposite of feeling anxious and on edge doesn't have to be predictable and monotonous. So we can still acknowledge parts of our original climate and parts of our just general personality and find ways to still embrace that without labeling everything that we have that, again, doesn't fit that grocery list of wholesome ingredients as toxic or as needing to be adjusted and fixed. Sometimes, again, like, you can still keep parts of the way that you learned about love that might feel a little bit edgier, There might have been a sense of codependency there, which, again, culturally in our society, we're told is a bad thing. But you might find that there are bits of codependency that you actually do still crave and value, but maybe just in a slightly different way than when you were raised. So that's what I mean by not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not saying that the way that you loved in childhood, even if it was imperfect, needs to be completely tossed out in order to adopt a new way. But to Ginger's point, there can be a beautiful blending of the two. That might take the effort of a therapist or a mediator to help you decipher that.
Just based off of this conversation, I need to do a little bit more research about myself to really put together the new list for my new lover so that they can understand, like, what, wait, for me to understand first how I need love, and then I can convey that to the world and then attract that, as opposed to I'm saying I want one thing and then I'm doing something else, and that's not really in alignment. It's not the truth, just like Ginger was saying. So how do I put that together and make that the actual, like, compass and guide to me?
Wonderfully said, Khadija. And yeah, I couldn't bold and underline that prompt for yourself anymore. The extra bit of work of taking a little bit that some people would leave in order to really make this list unique to you is a worthwhile practice. I think there's actually so much more that we could really dive into on this, and I want to give everyone time to digest, and maybe we'll book a second class where we can go over things more. But I want to end it with giving the journal prompt: what's something from your original love climate that you want to rewire? And what are some things that you just want to rework? Maybe it wasn't perfect. Maybe it's not flowers and classical music and massages with coconut oil, but there's something about us that still lights us up.
That's the end of our episode. There are two things that are kind of random that didn't really have a clean place, but I still wanted to include them. One is a clip from that video I shared with Jared, where he gave a very beautiful script for anybody who wants to explain to their partner that this is something they're working on.
I am still growing and I'm still learning. I'm trying to, you know, learn. I'm trying to learn, like, and get rid of the character flaws that I have from the way I grew up or the way that I learned as a kid. So, you know, as long as, like, I guess for me, as like, I just want to be able to have this space to make mistakes without it assassinating your view on me.
And the second thing I wanted to share was this really cute outtake of my daughters popping in on me.
And together, we're going to be tackling the question, why do we repeat childhood patterns? Naked kids!
We didn't know you were here.
You thought I was left?
Yeah.
No, I'm here.
You haven't seen me for a long time.
Mom!
Do you know what's something?
Mom, do the daddy.
I mean, we saw a dragonfly.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something really cool, Rye?
What?
Okay, come face this way because I don't want anyone to see your naked body. Zaza, that you can listen to, okay?
Mommy, listen.
Can I tell you something?
No, it's
my turn first, then your turn. Then your turn. So, you guys say I love you all the time, and you say it in context, which I think is really beautiful. So I always ask you, when you say I love you, what do you really mean? So I asked you yesterday because you said, Mom, I love you. I said, Rye, what is love? You said, I don't know. And then I said, well, what does it feel like? You know what you said?
It feels comfortable.
Do you know how beautiful that is?
Yeah.
Do you know how beautiful that is?
Yes.
And when I think about the thing that I want you to feel for the rest of your life when you think of love, the word comfortable comes to mind. Yeah, it's over. Are you still here? If so, let me tell you where else you need to be: inside of my lovers community. Check us out, because now the free tier offers so much more, including the opportunity to be a part of classes just like the one you watched.